Good morning and welcome to We the People Constitution Matters. I'm Bruce Stocking.
And I'm Corinne Lillis.
And we are back again for one of the fastest hours in radio where we talk about the United States Constitution. And today we're going to be joined by Gary Porter, Sam Rohr, and Chuck Proctor will be our contributors today in our discussion. And our discussion is going to deal with still the topic of the alleged, or as I call it, fantasy separation of church and state, and legislating from the bench as well. And we are probably going to be talking a little bit as well about the Supreme Court and their decision earlier this week to not hear appeals on the same-sex marriage cases that were presented to the court and were ruled on by lower courts. So we'll probably touch a little bit of that. But I do want to mention that there was an article that came out, and came out from Lakewood, Colorado, and it concerns Supreme Court Justice Anthony Scalia, who, by the way, is the court's longest-serving justice. And this was back on October 1st, where he went to Colorado Christian University to give a commencement speech there, and he talked about the separation of church and state, or the the fantasy of it and how it came about, and referred to such things on there as in reference to God and the country itself, that we do him, and him being God, honor in our pledge of allegiance in all our public ceremonies, is that you cannot remove God from the country itself, from its documents, and the founding of this country. And the separation of church and state means the government cannot favor religion over non-religion. He's referring to that in the Europeans run their government that way. But here we don't. And the fact to say that to have religion involved is unconstitutional is simply absurd. And of course, if you listen to the program that we do here on 1180 AM WFYL from Tuesday to Thursday, a new day, I've talked quite extensively about one group I call the American Terrorist Organization, the Freedom From Religion Organization, who tries to use the court system as their weapon to have God, have reference to any type of religion removed from schools. You can't do prayers during the holidays in front of governmental buildings and have the government involved with that. Well, Justice Scalia says it's ridiculous, totally ridiculous.
Something else I like that he said in that article, Bruce, is that the biggest danger lies with judges who interpret the Constitution as a malleable document that can change with the times.
Yes, and that will bring us to our topic today, which is with that document and manipulating the document. And one thing that I really liked that Scalia said and was reported in the article is that how he really has a stress-free job is because the law itself, and he says some of my colleagues agonize a lot. And I don't agonize at all over ruling when it deals with constitutional issues. He says, I look at the history and the text. The answer's there. And it's not my call. It's what the document says. And this is what we've been saying with this program all along. Mm-hmm. And why this program is here is to talk about the Constitution as it was written. And it was written in a way that the common man can read and understand it. To interpret the document as far as here's what they meant to say is ridiculous, because what they meant to say is what they said and what they wrote.
I think a lot of people, to tie this in, do that with the Bible, too.
Yeah, oh, yes. Oh, yes. Everything must be interpreted. You know, and I've always joked to the fact that they tend to try to interpret it like a Nostradamus quatrain, which it isn't. It's as it says. So with that said, I'm going to bring in Gary Porter. Gary, good morning.
Morning. It's a wonderful day in the Old Dominion.
Oh, it is. It's kind of a cool day up here. It was in the high 40s this morning, and we have that fall feeling to the air. And I'm sure
chilly.
Virginia will get there probably within the next week.
Yep.
So, continuing our discussion on the separation of church and state, and of course with legislating from the bench. Well, Gary, I'll throw it to you on that one.
Well, I was very heartened to hear Justice Scalia's remarks. I mean, he is really a great American and a true jurist in the founder's tradition. We are so glad to have him on the bench along with Clarence Thomas. But he hit the nail right on the head, that the First Amendment was not intended to erect this impenetrable wall that they found in 1947's Everson versus Board of Education case. It was not to keep religion out of government, or to not even to prevent the government from favoring religion over non-religion. Now, that impenetrable wall would have been anathema to the founders, the framers. They wouldn't have understood why you would ever want to do that.
And as he points out in there, the secular groups that want to push that and have it removed out of there, and he lays out that it's a European thing. In Europe, they do that. But this isn't Europe, and that's the thing about the United States, and we broke away from a European power to become our own nation, for we wouldn't have to follow those type of things. And this is why God is so centric to the Constitution, to the foundation of this country, and which is why they wanted to wrote it, no doubt.
Well, we broke away not only from a European power, but from European ideas of government.
Right.
Those ideas were quite prevalent across the continent of Europe, and the founders and the framers knew about them, and they didn't want any part of it.
Yeah, exactly. And to start our conversation off, I want to bring in Sam Rohr and Chuck Proctor. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you this morning?
We're doing just fine this morning, Bruce.
Bruce, how are you doing?
Oh, doing quite well, and I see you've inherited what I had last week, Chuck.
Just a little bit, but hopefully I'll be able to knock it out real quick.
Well, of course, as our commander-in-chief said in the very beginning, you got to share the wealth, so maybe that's what it has to do with it.
Well, I'm just hoping that the fact that under Obamacare, I don't have to change my doctor, I don't have to change my health plan, and my premium won't go up, that was going to cure whatever I've got at the moment.
That's right. Well, you're exactly right, because they're going to change your health care plan on you. They're going to cancel it because it doesn't conform. I think that's going to happen on November 1st. But that's another topic for another show. Sam, good morning to you as well.
Bruce, it's great to be here this morning, and what a topic to be back on again, because we could exhaust this. We spent a lot of time, but good stuff here today to go over.
Oh, yes, and I'll throw it to you gentlemen, what Gary and I were leading off and talking about here. A few words on that. I know we got a break coming up in a few minutes, Ed, but maybe a little statement from each one of you on the topic that we're dealing with.
Well, let me lead off, Bruce. The thing that I see and which I think is most critical is there was an article in the news this week about, I believe it was a school district in Colorado, that the headline was they want to take patriotism and loyalty and allegiance to the Constitution and the flag and et cetera out of the curriculum, out of the school books that the students are studying. And the problem is, as I see it, we don't have enough patriotism, we don't have enough loyalty or allegiance to our flag and to our country, and we certainly are not teaching our students about the background behind the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution. Yes, we talk about the Revolutionary War and the Battle of Lexington or what have you, but are we showing the students the writings of Jefferson or Washington or Franklin or any of the our other founding fathers, where they discuss explicitly their faith in God, and that's the only reason, that's the only basis that they formed this country and formed those documents and put together our form of government as it exists today.
Oh, exactly.
I want to interrupt you, gentlemen, just for a moment, and tell our listeners who are just now tuning in on their radio dial that you're listening to 1180 AM WFYL, licensed in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. This is the We the People Constitution Matters program.
Right, and also the fact that we took a little break here because the way the law and the way the station's set up is that we don't start broadcasting over the air until this time and that, but the program did start at 7. And you can stream us
any time of day, 24 hours.
Yes. Now, with that little business out of the way, I'll throw it back over. Sam?
Yeah, well, Bruce and Chuck, good comments this morning so far. And my sense on this, just a brief overview, is that, you know, what we're talking about here is our whole republic that we have and the constitutional underpinnings of which we're talking about principles that undergird and work itself out into the form of civil law. But the principles that our founders understood came from biblical truth, which underpins it. And so as we talk about these issues, so whether we talk about freedom of religion or private property rights or privacy or separation of powers or any of these things that we've touched on, every one of them has a firm biblical principle behind it. And what we've done in this country is we've walked away over the last generation from absolute truth. With that goes God. With that goes any kind of enduring principle. And you end up in a time where we kind of are now, where you do what you feel is right. And that's why we end up talking about now with judges who legislate, the separations are blurred, people who take an oath and don't uphold it. All of those things come back to certain fundamental principles. So I just put that in there as we go through, because every one of these things has a point to which we can go and say, this is the foundation. We're talking about the walls that are built on the foundation, but we got to go back to the principles, and I know we do as we go through this.
Yeah, no, Gary, based on what Sam and Chuck just said, but you've got other groups that, and I love the way they just use this, they throw this out all the time, is, you know, you can almost compare it to certain situations where you hear that they bring out the race card in, you know, on things. But, you know, from what Sam's saying, what some of these groups are saying, what Sam just said, that's unconstitutional.
Well, it's not. But let me, I love, Virginia takes the lead, I have to say this. Virginia takes the lead.
Go ahead, I'm a Virginian too, so you can go ahead and do that.
And we certainly did in 1776, even before the Declaration of Independence was penned, we were writing a Declaration of Rights for the people of Virginia. And one of those sections of that says, and I want to quote it, that no free government or the blessings of liberty can be preserved to any people but by a firm adherence to justice, moderation, temperance, frugality, and virtue, and, this is the important part, by frequent recurrence to fundamental principles. That's what we're not doing today. We are not taking the time to review these fundamental principles. And it was Sam, I think, that pointed out in the Colorado, they want to take this out of the curriculum. This is not going to have a good effect on our students, but we need to have a frequent recurrence to fundamental principles. That's one of the reasons why we had the tradition of election sermons in colonial America. Every year on election day, the government of that state, the governor, the lieutenant governor, the Senate and the House were sat down in their chambers and preached to by a pastor who reminded them of this frequent recurrence to fundamental principles. He reminded them of what their duties before God were and what the people expected them to do as their representatives. We don't do that today, of course.
Yeah, well, Sam, that is something that addresses that you've been saying about the pastors in the pulpit getting more involved. They used to.
Well, Bruce, they absolutely used to, and as Gary said very clearly, I mean, we need to state it again so folks understand. The point to which those who sat down and wrote out the Declaration of Independence and put their names on it, and all of those original individuals that sat down and put together what we're talking about, didn't do it in the space of a couple of years. They just didn't come to a point in their life where they say, oh, let's sit down and try something new. This was under cultivation for a long time. And where it was cultivated from was the pastors in the pulpit. Now, clearly, they didn't have a system of internet and communication back then. They didn't have telephones. The pastors were their points of communication, but what the pastors understood was that their communication was not just to stand up and say a stream of words. They had an obligation to stand up and speak the truth and apply it. So that's where they went to hear the principles of all of these things that we're talking about. I mean, can you imagine going to church and hearing a sermon on the biblical principles of taxation? because it's there.
Yeah, it is.
It's there. You know, in private property rights and inheritance tax, all these things we may talk about, it's all there, but that's where they went to hear about it. And when you hear it in the context of biblical principles and historical application, all of a sudden now you say, wait a minute, we have something pretty powerful here. So the pastors today have that same role. They just, in most cases, are not doing it. But my contention is that's where we have to begin it again, because it's not coming out of our schools. It's got to come out of the pulpit.
Right. Now, Chuck, you brought
here's some titles.
Go ahead, Gary.
Here's some titles of sermons from the colonial period. The Christian Duty of Resistance to Tyrants. Civil government is for the good of the people. The right of self-government is from God. True principles of government. These were sermons that were preached to people from the pulpits of the colonial America.
Well, now, Gary, you can also point out the fact, too, that nowhere else in the world would a minister be allowed to do such a thing but here in America.
Well, if you really look at those subject matters in those sermons, none of those violate the current IRS guidelines. But still, there's this pulling back of the pastors, thinking that if they talk about anything political, that they're going to jeopardize their 501c3 status.
Well, Chuck, and you brought up the fact and got this conversation going, mentioning about in Colorado and that. Maybe a little bit more. Where are they coming from with this? Why are they trying so hard to get rid of this, in your thoughts?
Well, you know, this concept of political correctness has just gone way off the charts. And I'll give you an example in the church. I just heard this last night from one of my students. Her father is a pastor with a particular denomination. I'm not going to go there. And the denomination sent out a bulletin. Samuel, love this. Sit still. And the bulletin said to all the pastors in this denomination, we are going to be more accepting of, and we are going to be preaching from the pulpit about gay marriage and homosexual rights. Now, for my student's father, he said, no way. Now, he said it a little bit more emphatically than that, but he was not going to comply with that. Somebody, whether it's in the church or whether it's in the Board of Education, has just lost their mind with this political correctness. You heard about in Nebraska where we're no more boys and girls.
Yeah.
It's going to be purple penguins or something.
Yeah, I just heard that this morning.
It's crazy. And I saw the superintendent, they had a clip of him, one of those infamous sound bites, trying to justify this whole concept. Now, in my classes, it's ladies and gentlemen. They're all, you know, mm-hmm. college or post-college students. It's ladies and gentlemen. And particularly in one of my groups, I'm making it a point to lift up the women. I have a group of foreign students, and I'm trying to lift them up, and I refer to them as ladies, and they're very intelligent. They're very smart. But where we get this idea of somebody thinking, well, we've no more boys and girls. We have to be gender correct or gender neutral. We have to espouse from the pulpit gay marriage or gay rights. Where that's coming from, I can only surmise, and my surmise, I don't even know if we want to go there. I personally think that this is coming from much higher up. And a lot of pressure, whether it's losing your 501c3 or whatever.
Yeah. Gary?
Well, it is coming from... What has happened is that minority groups in the United States have learned that they can use the courts to bypass democracy, to bypass the will of the majority, and get their rights exerted, even if the majority of the American people are not in concert with them. Let me read you something that Chief Justice John Marshall said. He said, "The Constitution is not a panacea for every blot upon the public welfare, nor should this court, ordained as a judicial body, be thought of as a general haven for reform movements." Well, that is exactly what we have today. We have the court system being used for reform movements. They found out that they can get some success this way, so this is now the perceived means for moving the country in a different direction.
Well, you know, and there's the other point that I want to get to with this program today is the using the courts like that to legislate from the bench to overrule the populace, even if the populace of a state voted for something, and the courts come in and go, "Oh, that's great, you did that, but yeah, we're going to say that's unconstitutional, so you wasted your time on that." And why are the courts doing this? I mean, Sam, you laid out the fact here in Pennsylvania situation about the courts can overshadow the legislation as well.
Well, Bruce, why are the courts doing this? The courts are doing this because the other two bodies, the two branches that are to be hold things in check, have backed off. And I contend, and this, my time was spent in the legislature, I contend that the legislature, the legislative branch, which really is to be the premier branch of the three, if you were to put it in order of that way, because that is where the law comes from, leaders have disappeared. The legislature generally find it much more easy and palatable to take and blame certain things on other branches. So if they can blame it on the governor, blame it on the president, they do. If they can blame it on the court, they do. And obviously, if they fail to hold either one of them accountable, which is exactly what we're seeing, then those other two, in an unconstrained environment, will assume to themselves more power, and so that's what we're seeing. I mean, if we do not understand that our frame of government and all that we're talking about came from a very, very particular view, a biblical worldview, it is only maintained if we continue with that view, which assumes absolute truth, assumes accountability to a higher power, God, self-control, self-discipline according to higher law. If we pass those things off and say that every approach is equal, if we do that, this form of government cannot survive. And I believe that we who hold the absolute truth have been oftentimes put in a corner, and many of them have taken a position that, well, you know what, I guess we can't really stand up and say this is a better way, or there is such a thing as truth, and defend it. And the result of it is, if you don't defend it, you lose it. We're losing it. And I think this program we're talking about, we're involved in here, is to help put out the fact that there are some things that you can know for sure, that you must know for sure, that you must articulate and you must defend, or in fact you will lose it.
Yeah, in fact, it sounds to me that the courts are becoming the willing participant as the weapon to be used for an agenda.
Bruce, when we come back from the break, I see it's coming up real fast. I want to give you the latest on the Hobby Lobby Conestoga.
Yes.
And an order which now is advocating future legislation. You won't believe what has happened in this case.
We will get to that when we get right back. We're going to take a brief break, a commercial break, and a little news break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, Constitution Matters, right here on 1180 AM WFYL. And we are back for the second half of our We the People Constitution Matters. I'm Bruce Stocking.
And I'm Corinne Lillis.
And I'm joined today by Gary Porter, Executive Director of the Constitution Leadership Initiative, Sam Rohr, former state legislator of Pennsylvania and president of the Pennsylvania American Pastors Network, and Charles Proctor, law firm of Proctor & Lindsay. And just before the break, Chuck, you were talking about with the Hobby Lobby Conestoga Wood Specialties ruling that was done by the Supreme Court. You have a little bit more intel on this, don't you?
Yeah, just recently, Bruce, we were wrapping up some of the legal procedure things that need to be done, and having our injunction made permanent and a judgment entered by the court. And the government asked the judge at the Eastern District level to put a footnote on the order that says that in an overabundance of caution, if in the future the government passes legislation and or a regulation regarding this same mandate that has been overturned by the Supreme Court, then the government has the right to enforce it against Conestoga and thus Hobby Lobby. Where in the world, and we had to write a brief on it. We had to brief the judge on that whole topic. Where in the world is there any precedent for any court saying if in the future legislation is passed? That's like saying to the legislature, go ahead and pass something. That's like telling Health and Human Services, give us another regulation, and if you do, we'll enforce it. That's what that footnote says. Now, the footnote is not law, it's not the order, it's not the judgment, and the government would have the responsibility to come up with something. But it gives them an open door to come back at the same thing that's already been decided by the United States Supreme Court.
Yeah, and gentlemen, this is something that what you just said, Chuck, is that, yeah, you know, in a heartbeat they're going to look at that and go, ah, door open, let's jump in on this thing. And thus, again, we get back to the fact that even a Supreme Court ruling can be modified in such a way.
It's absolutely without precedent, and we were shocked at it. We tried to work through it with them, with the government and with the judge, but in this overabundance of caution, which makes it, when you first see that, it sounds like, well, he's being very careful here. He's not being very careful. He's opening that door to more destruction, as Sam just said a few minutes ago during the break, of the erosion of the foundations of our country and our republic. And this is what the judiciary is doing throughout the country, not just here in Pennsylvania, not just in one district or another, but throughout the United States. We're seeing it in time after time after time. A little bit of a divergence. We're seeing on TV these judges who, by law, are supposed to sentence certain criminal offenders to certain terms of incarceration, mm-hmm. and penalty and what have you. And the judges are absolutely ignoring it. Yeah. The legislature, and this is what Sam was getting at, the legislature sets forth, here's what the penalty is, X number of years in prison, X number of fine. Yeah. And the judges are going, oh, that doesn't matter. And particularly when it comes to the issue of, and this is way off, but these sexual predators, that particularly the teachers with the children, the gentleman, I'm being kind, yeah. in Wyoming, who gave the teacher 30 days.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the way. Now, Gary, constitutionally with the Supreme Court, Ryan, what's this coming about? This is total, if anything's unconstitutional, what Chuck was just talking about is.
Well, Chuck talked about an erosion, and I'll tell you when that erosion began. It began in the 1870s with Christopher Columbus Langdell, who was dean of Harvard Law School. He came up with a new theory of law known as legal positivism, and it replaced what was the traditional theory of law, natural law theory. Let me read you a couple of the tenets of what legal positivism is all about. Number one, there are no divine absolutes in law, or if they are, they are irrelevant to a modern law system. Number two, law is simply man-made. Whatever the government decides is law. Number three, law evolves as man evolves. So this whole idea of the judges legislating from the bench is just an outgrowth of this whole idea that law is something different now. There's no root in law founded in God or God's revealed or natural law. So when you put judges into that environment, of course they see no reason that they can't move the country in a new direction, because law is simply whatever man says it is. So the judges then have perfect freedom then to move the country in a social policy sense, the way they think it ought to go. Judge Ruth Ginsburg recently said, about 2 years ago, she was speaking about Roe v. Wade, and she complained that Roe v. Wade, it wasn't that the judgment was wrong, but it moved the country too far, too fast. Well, Yes. Yeah. If you think that it's the judge's job to move the country in the direction that they perceive it should go, then certainly that statement makes sense. But that's not obviously what the judges and the judiciary is there for.
Sam, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
So you explained in the first segment that the government won't survive if we don't hold to the biblical principles and absolute truth. Do you think that the government... Like, do you really think that the government doesn't realize that? Like, don't they know that they're not going to survive over time? Like, how long do they think that they can keep this up? That's my question.
Well, Corinne, I think that's a very good question. The answer is I'd say no, they don't. You know, because if you set aside the rule of law, we talk about the rule of law. They talk
mm-hmm.
about the rule of law.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ask them to define it, I'm not sure they can tell what the rule of law is.
Mm-hmm.
In many cases, they think they are the law, which is why they can, many cases, they feel like they can, if they make it, they can break it.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't understand. So the concept of higher law, they don't understand. So they don't understand that. And when you get to a point where you think that, put in a biblical sense, it's what God told Israel. When they went into the land, he said, I'm going to bless you. You're going to have all these wonderful things that are going to take place, prosperity and security, all that we've had. But he said, don't get to the point where you think you forgot and think that you got it all yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because at which point you do, then you're going to lose it. I think we've fallen into a time where those in office think that what we have is because of them. And it's not at all because of them.
Right.
So I think that's really where it is. I don't think they know, frankly.
And that kind of fits into what Obama was saying that one time. Oh, you didn't build that.
That's scary. I don't know. It's just scary to me to think about that they don't realize that. Like what you're saying, Sam. So what are things that we could do to help them realize that? I don't know. What can we do?
Well, this is what it is. What you would do is, again, I come back from my perspective. We have a generation that does not know our own history of our own country. They do not understand these fundamental principles. How do you correct that? Well, you have to train them. You have to teach them.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the best place for that to be taught? We started the program with it. It's got to be pastors in the pulpit because this is a matter of truth. Where is truth supposed to come from? Where does it come from? It's got to come from there. If they fail to do that, the nature of man itself is to consolidate power to themselves. That's the nature of government, and that's what we see happening right now. It's an unnatural thing to divest yourself of power and to think that power is in the people, which is a very unusual thought to the tyrannies of government of old, but that's taught. Where's that taught from?
Yeah, well, Sam, that brings up a little bit of a commentary that I did earlier this week is, yeah, the pastors in the pulpit, absolutely, but to get the people to go into those churches to hear that pastor in the pulpit or to meet the pastor and listen to the pastor in there. And as I said in one of my commentaries, we're up against another force, which I call the new religion. It's not a new religion. It's been around for a while. It's the fact that on Sundays, people are so enamored with their professional football and sports that church has fallen by the wayside as well, is how to get them back in.
Yeah, and I think that people are all about this life of comfort. So, like, if it's comfortable for me, then I'll do it. But if I feel uncomfortable talking about that, then I don't want to put myself in that situation. I'll just avoid it. It's all about this comfort. Like, what's good for me? And they don't, like, the pastors don't want to talk about it. The people don't want to talk about it because it's uncomfortable and it might make a couple people upset. But you can't, I mean, that's impossible to please everyone. So I just think that this world of comfort that we try to live in is just going to really hurt us in the long run.
Corinne, it's interesting. What I'm hearing from young people that I interact with in a variety of settings is that same philosophy, attitude, whatever you want to call it, of comfort. Well, you know, it's okay. Let them do what they want. I still have my beliefs. I'm still there. But the other people, let them do what they want. And really, I don't want to dig into it because that's really a hard question. And what does that reflect? What Sam was saying is that they don't have a foundation. If you have a foundation and you have a belief system, then that comfort level is not going to bother you. But when you don't have anything underpinning where you're at, then you're going to want to stay in your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what's happening. I hear that from young people all the time. So from your perspective, what do we do about that?
I don't know. That's something that I work on too with myself. I just think the best thing is to know what you believe and to hold true to it. Just really know what you believe. So the more things that you're learning, for me, you know, in the Bible and things like that, just really knowing what you believe and backing that up. And I think, I mean, we've talked about this before, that sometimes the battle isn't necessarily in our hands. I mean, the battle is against God. We've said that. So I don't know. I think just knowing what you believe and not, if people just get tossed around so easily. You know, they read one thing on the internet or they hear one person's opinion and it's like, oh, okay, I'm going to go follow that now because that's the comfortable new thing. It's like nobody wants to hold true to what they really believe in their heart because they don't want to make an enemy or have someone look down on them. They want people to, you know, look at them in a positive way in their eyes or something.
Now, Gary, you do address these type of things with your Constitution Leadership Initiative, do you not?
Well, I do, and the main portion of that initiative is teaching the Constitution. It's so difficult to find people willing to come out and actually learn about the Constitution and how the founders viewed its words. But Corinne asked, what can we do? And I kind of summarize it this way. We commonly abbreviate letter to the editor as LTE, but let's take those same letters and make our own little acronym from them. Learn, talk, and engage. We've got to first learn what the Constitution says, what it was intended to mean. We've got to talk about it among ourselves and among our neighbors, and then we've got to engage with our government. We've got to engage with our representatives and make those feelings known. We're not doing any of those, unfortunately. We are sitting back in our Barco loungers, in our comfort zone, if you will, and the American people have got to understand if that continues, they're going to lose this republic.
Yeah, because you think about it. Go ahead,
Franklin
Gary.
Franklin was right. It is a republic only if we can keep it, yeah. And it requires that we engage to keep it.
And I think that's with anything. The more you, like, what, going back to what I said, I just feel like I can't stress that enough. With the Constitution, with the Bible, with whatever it is, if you don't know it that well, and someone comes along and tells you, oh, that's not right, and they lie about something in it, or they lie about something in the Constitution, like, oh, that's not your right. And if you don't know enough about the Constitution, you're just going to believe them, because what other choice do you have? Because you don't know, because you haven't learned it.
Yeah, Sam, you want to address that?
Yeah, I do. There's a passage in the book of Ezekiel. I'm just going to bring it up just very quickly because we talk about why, and it's a passage that describes really what's happening here today. We say, why are the judges doing what they're doing, you know, and what's the legislature doing? I'm not going to read the whole thing, but in the verse 25 of chapter 22, it talks about this is why God was going to bring judgment on Israel, and it said there's a conspiracy of her prophets in the midst thereof. They're like roaring lions devouring the prey. They've taken precious things and the treasure from the people. Her priests have violated my law, profaned my holy things. No difference between the profane and the unprofane, so forth. And then her princes are like wolves ravening the prey. And then it talks about the prophets working in conjunction with the priest to establish effectively an exploiting of the people. Now, really, the application here is this. The prophets, by application, is a legislative branch. That's the putting forth of the truth. That's the law. The priests are the judges. They're the ones that interface in the middle. And the princes are, of course, the executive branch. They're the ones who are to enforce the law. What was happening here was that they together were conspiring to distort the truth. And the prophets, though the legislative branch, more effect, where you could say the preachers of the day, too, there's a double application there, were actually coming back and substantiating what the priests were saying. So the priests were saying what is true, it's not true, what is not true. I mean, so it's like, you know, abortion is legal. Life is not important. Well, they were redefining things of that type, and the prophets, the legislative, were coming back and just letting it stand. But the problem was that the people, as also mentioned in here, which is under our view of the Constitution, the powers of the people had a role too in the fact they allowed it to happen. That's all covered in this passage. It really speaks to what we're talking about here. It's a matter of truth. Corinne, you're talking about it. You have to know. Well, what it is, you know. You can either know a lie or you can know the truth. If you know the truth, and you really know where it came from and why, well, now you can defend it.
Mm-hmm.
But if those in positions of authority, in particular, who have a responsibility for the truth, actually say, I'm no longer going to follow it. Matter of fact, I'm going to cover for you, Mr. Judge. I'm going to let you go ahead and do what you're doing. And the judge says, well, yeah, we got a deal going here. The result was the people were exploited. Truth fell. Justice was distorted. And God said, all right, I've had enough with you. And then that's what happened. But these things, knowing the truth, our founders took and put it into place in principles. Mm-hmm. That's what we're talking about with the Constitution. Those who were put in office are to have character and integrity. So when they take an oath and they promise, we expect them to fulfill it. But if they don't fulfill their oath because they don't believe in truth, we have what we have. So answer to your question, we have to tell the truth, and we have to begin looking for people who are not just smart and tall and have a lot of money for into office. Mm-hmm. We have to have people put in office who are people of integrity and character and integrity, which is exactly what our founders told us.
And let me point out, too, on this, if anybody has any doubts about this or in listening to everything that goes on with God and religion being involved in the Constitution of the United States, you look at these gentlemen gathered in Philadelphia that created this document, and what was their background, and what did they read, what did they learn, and where did this information come from? What Sam just read is exactly what these men were raised on, and mm-hmm. what they learned on, and what they were taught, along with the experiences that they all had with a king and with a parliament telling them what to do. This is what brings it all together. And this is the basis that it's in. And to say that there is no God religion involved in this country, as Scalia said, is false. Mm-hmm. And understanding the basis where these men are coming from, what they read, this was their media of their day. This is what they watched. This was their Dancing with the Stars that they looked at constantly. And so there's the basis. Am I right with that, Gary?
Absolutely. You're right. Spot on. I thought you were concluding our session because this is such a great summary.
Well, Sam just got me fired up here. That's what it is.
I have a comment from a listener. He says that the truth is that people don't want to be subject to God as the supreme author and truth. And when man takes truth into their own hands, you get the prosperity gospel.
Well, then again, Chuck, in the Supreme Court is not the Ten Commandments there, and it's the Word of God, correct?
Not only is it there, but you also have images from biblical times. You have Moses and Abraham and what have you on the walls, not only in the United States Supreme Court, but in Pennsylvania we have a beautiful Supreme Court room there. But I want to go back to something that Gary said about the legal positivism. And the president of Harvard, when he instituted the case law study method in law schools, what he was doing is saying, we're not going to study the Bible anymore. We're going to study what man has written. And it was the start down the slippery slope. So we don't study the Bible in law school. We don't study what the Founding Fathers wrote and why they crafted those documents the way they did. We study what judges have written. And over time, you can see the erosion, as Sam said earlier. And you can see what Gary was saying about legal positivism creeping into not just judicial decisions, but what's coming out of the legislatures. Because the legislatures are feeding this frenzy by passing laws that make no sense.
But then comes that phrase from one of those guys that had funny hairstyles and wore those knickers that met in Philadelphia that says, the execution of the laws is more important than the making of them. And to interpret a law based on, and we've talked about this many times, on case law and study case law versus constitutional law, you're literally, in my mind, and I'm going to throw this question out there for the roundhouse, in my mind, by doing that, you are then permitting a legislating from the bench.
Well, Bruce, the biggest problem with case law is this. There are tens of thousands of cases out there. I can't even begin to count them. On any subject you want to bring up. As a result, what's happened is, in the study of law, when we go into the law library, we don't just look at a case. we then have to look at a case and what we do, we call it shepherdizing, where we look to see how many other cases are on that same subject. And we see if they've been affirmed, reversed, if they've been distinguished in any way. And in this process, what's happened is you can make any argument on any subject and find some support or some theory that will back you up from some judge in some court, whether it's here in Pennsylvania or whether it's in California. And with this proliferation of cases, which is only increasing, it's not going anywhere, we have more and more confusion. What should we be doing? We should be going back to and looking at the Bible, not case law. We should be going back and looking at the Constitution, not case law, and then making an application. As a result, many cases that have been decided have been reversed over time. And people say, oh, it's evolving. It's not evolving. It is the same now and forever as it was in the beginning.
Well, Chuck, I think you just answered the question I think I threw out last week, in which I think the three of you gentlemen were kind of like, whoa, when I said, you know, with the attack on religion, the courts trying to answer the fact, oh, yes, anything religion-wise is unconstitutional. I think you just answered it, really, when you come down to it, is that, you know, the why question of why the attack on religion, you just did it. Looking at the past and ruling off of those. Sam, your thoughts on that?
Well, I think what Chuck said is exactly correct. If you take the source of truth and in truth, the roadmap, and you take it to the side, then anything goes. Mm-hmm. So case law is effectively anything goes. If you say the originals don't make any sense and absolute truth no longer exists, which is effectively the ideology that undergirds all that we're talking about here, when you take and put that to the side, then it's forever changing. It's not certain. It will move from term to term, from legislator to legislator, from judge to judge. And of course, knowing truth does not evolve. Truth is. But we're talking about a system that evolves, which means it can't be truth.
Yeah. Exactly. And Sam, I mean, Gary, your thoughts on this?
Well, part of the problem that we face is this feeling that whatever the judges say about the law is the final word. And of course that's not true. There are many remedies when we have judicial rulings that are in error. Sometimes the court corrects itself, but more often than not, the people have to take steps. And people need to understand there are some remedies. There are constitutional remedies that we have that we're not invoking. There's judicial stripping. There's legislation that can reverse a Supreme Court decision or a lower court decision. So there's all kinds of remedies, and maybe next week we can get into a discussion of some of those and how they've been used over the years to set the courts straight or to set rulings straight so that we don't end up with an oligarchy. We have a republic, not an oligarchy. An oligarchy is ruled by a select few, an elite. That's what we're moving towards with this feeling that the courts have the final say on any matter. That's not a republic. The people have the final say, and we'll talk about next week some ways that the people can exert their influence.
And if you gentlemen, whoever wants to jump in, just maybe stress briefly to our listeners how important this November 4th election is for multiple reasons and why it shouldn't be taken lightly, like their vote doesn't matter.
50% of Christians are 50% of Christians are registered, and only 50% of the registered Christians vote. That is abhorrent and needs to change. Christians need to influence the elections.
Sam? Mm-hmm.
And without a question, we have an opportunity like most countries do not have in the history of the world, never experienced before. It's a duty we have. But again, bear in mind, if we go to the polls, if we elect people who do not meet the qualifications of integrity and character, we will get what we have. So we must have people understand what truth is and then seek out and encourage and vote for those who are committed to the truth. That's how you change it.
Mm-hmm. Chuck?
The condition that we're in today didn't spring up in the last 4 years or 6 years. This has been coming for a long time, and we discussed earlier some of the reasons that happened. And I think people are discouraged thinking, well, gee, this election, yeah, maybe we'll change the Senate, maybe this will happen, but we still have a president, and we still have this election, and we still have that election. But we have to take it one step at a time, and this November is the first step towards reversing and correcting some of the problems that we have today. And people have to be hopeful and trust that the Lord will guide those steps with as soon as we reach out, as soon as we step out in faith towards making those changes and going back to what we know works, what we know is godly, and what we know will bless this country.
Excellent. Well, gentlemen, that brings us to an end. I'd like to thank Gary Porter, Executive Director of the Constitution Leadership Initiative, Sam Rohr, President of the Pennsylvania American Pastors Network, Chuck Proctor, Law Office of Proctor & Lindsay, my co-host, Corinne Lillis, and the journey continues. And next week, I kind of like the idea of overturning some Supreme Court rulings through legislation. So maybe that's a topic we can talk about. But for We the People, Constitution Matters, I'm Bruce Stocking. Have a great weekend. Today being Friday, it's fall out there, folks. Go out and do something fall-wise with the family. We'll see you next week.